That shit hurt. Not too long of a day goes by but before I'm like, damn, I fucking miss Gawker. That is my favorite website. And now, in this case, this is like version 2.0.
You know my favorite website used to be?
What?
Candystand.com. What
I could have gone somewhere better. Right.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send the Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-captain, co-pilot, and corduroy pant wearer? DJ?
Are you wearing corduroy as well?
I'm...
No, I actually was misled today. I thought the weather would be, or at least the atmospherics would lead one to believe that it was much colder than it would be today, but it actually wasn't. Shout out to us just talking about the weather.
Well, listeners, you need a time and place. The place is Brooklyn. The time is 7-something in the evening. Mm-hmm. And the date is November 5th?
6th?
6th? November 6th?
Yes.
We haven't quite gotten the cold weather. And, you know, with that comes a little trepidation about fashion. I'm not sure. What should I look like? Should I? I don't know. So you stepped out there.
Yeah. And I've imbibed a lot of media over the past few months. And years about like in relation to the climate crisis and shit, and oddly enough, there's a tangential element to us just casually talking about the weather because you can imagine the worst case scenario around November 6th, X amount of years from now, you'd be like, oh yeah, I was still just had to swim over here.
It's 120 degrees.
I had to swim from Coney Island all the way into the front of the building right here. Because Brooklyn is underwater.
I mean, yeah, you're talking about the great oceanic coast of Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's going to be heat. Can't wait.
Can't wait to that season in the office. They're bringing it back because it's going to be a beach town. That mixed with Jaws, going to be some Jaws shit. This was a good aside tangent.
I mean, DJ, we can talk about the impending doom of the planet due to climate change, or we can talk about the impending doom of the media landscape due to corporatist takeovers.
I knew you were gonna do that. That was good.
Hey man, you know, bring it home.
Bring it home.
Bring home from y'all.
That was good. Yeah, talk about the latter.
So, if you're not aware, and I really want to lean on my co-host to paint the picture of the importance of this site, which I've never seen such a weird downfall of a brand due to so many extenuating circumstances. But over the past week, we finally saw the end of Deadspin as we know it in some extent.
I think as just Deadspin period, I don't even think you have to put as we know it.
I'm not sure yet.
Like, are they just going to put up like aggregated content?
It's going to be like
game scores and shit.
Game. It's going to be a game ticker with just, I don't know, ads and shit.
Apparently the new EIC has been trying to still put up a little bit of content, and they're pulling other articles from sister Go Media sites just to fill out the feed on a daily. I haven't checked Deadspin since its reckoning last week, but that's what it appears to be the case.
So just to give you guys a general sense, Deadspin, the sports culture politics site. I'm gonna give it those three.
Sure.
Those three adjectives as of now.
Yeah, I'm opening up now.
They didn't shutter, but they had a mass quitting from their editorial staff due to directives made by the leadership of the as of last year, ownership. Great Hill Media, which had purchased the brand after it had been spun off from Univision, after it had been bought from the dissolution of Gawker due to the massive, powerful thighs and quads of Hulk Hogan.
The leg drop.
You know, I mean, as an aside, that was one of our earliest pods, DJ. We talked about that. This is like 2016, early 15, late 15, 16.
What is this nigga leg dropped on Gawker Media?
Yeah, we had a good time.
I was probably here crying and shit. Man, that shit hurt. not too long of a day goes by but before I'm like, damn, I fucking miss Gawker. That is my favorite website. And now, in this case, this is like version 2.0.
You know my favorite website used to be?
What?
Candystand.com. What
I could have gone so many different. Right. yeah, and this is kind of like version 2.0 that Gawker was my favorite. I mean, Gawker was my favorite site, but Deadspin in the previous version was and is my favorite sports site because their angle has always been it's without favor or access journalism, and they would pull from so many different disparate angles and topics and the through lines between, you know, sports and culture and life and politics and food, oddly enough, and weird things with animals and ranked lists and
bears.
Yeah. Oddly enough. And it was a novelty lifestyle site, that had its own, quirk and idiosyncrasies to it. And that was, from all accounts, fairly successful and had a fairly large readership. So I'm sure you'll be able to detail when you have the piece up. You may want to share the name and where you got it from, but the devolution of it happened rather fast based on the interest of big money and private equity acquisitions and the kind of longstanding tumble coming from the Peter Thiel's scythe that came from behind the Hulk Hogan's leg drop so many years ago, when Gawker Media, which comprised of, you know, like Jezebel, Gawker, Gizmodo, and Deadspin, amongst others, had to be sold out and sold for parts because of the brunt of just a lot of people with money, essentially. And then now, the new management of Deadspin is trying to monetize and nickel and dime the entire process, while also forsaking any type of journalistic freedom and quality.
Or integrity.
And that was completely anathema to the Deadspin staff at the time, so which led to their it was a slow rolling thing, at least over the course of the past few months, but I guess the dam kind of finally broke a few days ago when X amount of people left and there was basically like no one on the payroll.
Right. So the piece we have is the ham-handed, money-driven mangling of Sports Illustrated and Deadspin by Louisa Thomas in The New Yorker. And it sort of gives a nice breadth of, first of all, what happened to Sports Illustrated, where a similarly nameless, faceless company named Maven purchased them and eventually broke them down to the point where they just fired all the people, and then it just became a husk of what was this decades-long sports brand that we've known forever.
The sports magazine, I would say. Yeah, so, legacy brand. Yeah.
So similarly, Deadspin, even though it's much younger, but has a dedicated following, i.e. or my co-host, suffered a similar fate under Geo Media, from Gizmodo to Green Hill. Is it Green Hill again? I'm in this piece, but it's just a lot.
You lost.
And from there was an investigation about Geo Media from the writers of Deadspin, which sort of spurred on an internal memo from Paul Maidment, who also has since left the company.
Oh, okay. Ironic. Yeah.
To stick to sports.
Yes. So it's weird when you acquire or buy something. When you like, do you just not know where you're getting, or you just feel like you have enough power and sway to where your subordinates would just do whatever you say after they've had their own way of going about things for so long, and Deadspin has such an identity that why would he think that they would just stick to sports? Or maybe this was a ploy to get the employees to leave.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. There's that Bain Capital shit. You know, it's just like, well, I bought this entity And what I imagine for it, or whatever we imagine for it, is either a using this brand for the purposes of whatever we inspire it to be, or the hardcore flip of just like, let's get it profitable, flip it to somebody stupid, and move on. And I just want to give a shout out to this piece in Slate, which is like a conversation, what happened to Deadspin, according to who they, according to people who were there, by Stefan Fatsis and Josh Levin over at Slate, talking with Megan Greenhill, Barry Pachetsky, and Tom Lee, editors and writers at Deadspin, who sort of allude to that second point where, like, and that you said, like, who, why don't they know what they're getting? To the point where Megan was saying, I would come up with these charts and I would show them, like, this is our readership. These are the comments of people who like the things we do, and why aren't you listening to us? And the point where it just seemed like they didn't want to participate with that. They just knew that they wanted to do what they wanted to do, and it didn't matter. Quote, I was in dozens of meetings with Paul Maidment and Jim Spanfeller between the time they took over and the time I left. I could just never get them to care. I would sit in rooms with them and present them with vision memos. I'd written spreadsheets showing the data, testaments from people who worked there and people who read the site. It was the most frustrating professional experience of my life, because it felt like I was truly talking to a brick wall. So, you know, these people, they come in with their plan. Great Hill's like, you know, we want to do what we want to do. You want to make money. We want to make this amount of clicks on the site. And hopefully, I mean, for them, if they sell it, they get a whole bunch of money, and then that's it. It doesn't have the same value that the readers have, or it's just a cynical game about something that isn't a tangible property, like, I don't know, the oil company or a magazine.
Yeah.
The quality of it is in the consistency of its product.
And written content, right? Or in media content. So that's what makes it so confounding to at least us, at least me, where, yeah, it's a different type of product than something physical that can be made either by, you know, for better or worse. You can make a Ford in Detroit, Michigan, or you can make it in Xinjiang, China, right? Like, I mean, it's going to be the same car using the same ingredients. When it comes to journalism and writing per se, and giving off prose, you can't just shuffle that off to the next person or say we can just do better, cheaper, faster. That's just not how it operates, and that's just not the type of product that it is. So that seems just from on its face, just rather wrongheaded to go into that and trying to change the, if you try to change a journalistic approach for, let's say, that for that floor for Deadspin, then you're just going to come out with a completely different website. So it just seems like we're just was running up into this brick wall that you mentioned, or that was quoted, just from the onset. It's really perplexing me. I think what they do is, as you're saying, if it is not making sense, you have a property, you have a brand in Deadspin, right? So the idea is that they still will be able to, regardless of who the writers and editors are, they still would have a relatively captured, you know, fan base, right? You're nodding, but you ain't saying anything.
I didn't want to say anything about it because you had a good point.
Oh, well, no, you have a captured fan base, and you try to maintain that, if not grow that, by also potentially putting out more product, like putting out more posts,
right?
Which has a high chance of decreasing the quality of the writing, by also, I guess, so-called, you know, your stick to sports, where you're sticking to the fundamental things that are known to bring about consistent follow-ups without too much, I guess, emotional polarization. And was there a third point to that? Am I grasping at straws here? I guess merch. Yeah, sure. Video content. I remember when all these media entities were trying to pivot to video, and apparently there was a gap in the Facebook algorithm when actually video wasn't nearly as important as it was, and a lot of people got fired.
Right.
But they're just trying to break it down to its most, you know, base rooted parts.
Like the common lowest common denominator of what it would be. So you had this brand, and it's sports, and with that, everyone can have sports content. So having a tone is what gives it its value. So you think about stripping it into this, I don't know, or this bar stool.
Fucking
thing.
Bleacher. I mean, even Barstool has its own.
Yeah,
but has its own thing.
Exactly, but they have it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, they have it. They have that. What we're really talking about is all these entities, specifically when it comes to sports media, trying to turn their shit into like Bleacher Report. That's what they want to do.
And you can't.
Why can't you?
Because Bleacher Report has television deals, and they're part of the conglomeration of sports. They're not an outside entity, which is why they make so much money. It's easy for them to do that. They are in partnership with Turner.
Mm-hmm.
They have NBA and baseball or whatever already locked in.
Okay, so they were the first to market with them. Essentially, that's one of the biggest.
Not even the first to market, the first to have the rights to the video.
Okay.
So if you're going to pivot to video and you have to pay $20,000 to make one just to get the rights to the video, yeah. You're not going to. You're not going to do it well.
Right.
So you're not going to catch Bleacher Report. You never will.
So you probably would need a different tack, right?
Yeah.
A different angle. And that's where the snubbing of the ass kissing and access journalism and snark was you know the core of Deadspin. There was rarely if ever any interviews on that site. They never interviewed anyone of like athletes and coaches and shit. Never. There really weren't that many videos on the site up until recently when they tried to monetize it more. And I think a couple of those pieces showed those complaints about when the back end of Go Media or Deadspin, they tried to embed videos on the site that auto-played. Deadspin got flooded with comments from angry readers saying, why the fuck are you putting these automatic videos on the site? So this is all to say, like, that's not what that site was about. So at its purest, it was just good, like, and unique writing. And you don't get that from many, if any, corners of the internet now, of that type of irreverent journalism contra the sports industry, the American sports industry. You just don't, you know. The next runner-up for me of, like, sports, like, non, you know, super-duper mainstream in the middle of the framework sports websites is maybe, like, The Ringer. And The Ringer is all access journalism. That's like, what the core of it is. The Ringer is excited to you know, interview Steve Kerr and shit about it. Like, that's what they do. And Deadspin was completely on the other end of the spectrum for that. So now there leaves just a massive void of a lack of writing and people wanting to get some type of, you know, journalism without the bullshit.
I want to give another quote from the Slate piece with Greenwell, and she kind of explains it pretty well. They were clearly focused on scale above all else. In my very early conversations, I said at one point, you know, the goal of Deadspin is not to be bigger than ESPN. And they were horrified by that. And I think in some ways, I don't think I ever redeemed myself for that. And this idea that, like, they were going to compete or become Bleacher Report, they weren't. So what's wrong with Dominic and Niche? What's wrong with The Ringer being The Ringer? What's wrong? Like, there's enough because people love sports, but there's not enough space for everything to be a giant.
Yeah, and the same. Yeah, the same. There's not enough room for everybody to be a mainstream institution like that. People only need to see the score of a game so many times. I do that in 2 seconds by asking my phone or going to the NBA app or whatever.
That's why when I think about all these brands or whatever, no brand I really started to appreciate, even though it's not for me, is Overtime.
Is that new or?
It's actually owned by MSG, low-key.
Okay.
But it's just like, look, we're teenagers. Like, that's their whole, like, aura. It's like, look what high school kid is dunking. And they all of them, everyone that works for them, they have, like, their online presence is Overtime, whatever. And they just, like, constantly post. And it's like this weird Gen Z shit. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't for me. But I get it. And it's working. They're getting the traction.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate it.
So you could just feel that the organics of it.
Well, it was not organic. You could tell it's very this calculated thing.
Oh,
nice. But it's not. It knows it's not Bleacher Report. It knows it's not these other things. They're leaning into this thing that creates a niche for them, which hopefully more brands try to do and don't make this cookie cutter bullshit.
this same guy, Jim Spanfeller, that became, well, that wound up starting to run the site, and then which caused the massive exodus at Deadspin. He, I believe, was the, I don't know exactly what the exact title was, but he basically ran Forbes X amount of years ago. And if you know anything about the Forbes website, it's just a massive content farm, which is a bunch of fucking Blanchett and mad lists and fucking clickbait and, oh, you got to click to the next page to see the rest of the content.
And they only have one killer app.
The list?
Forbes rapper list.
Oh, the rapper list.
The richest rappers.
Yeah, all these fucking lists and shit. And he spearheaded that, you know, so many years ago and views that as a, and what very well could be a viable business strategy, but it's just not, I don't view that as
whack.
Shit is whack. And I don't know about the long-term viability of that. Like, how many people are really returning to the Forbes website right now?
Who are their writers?
Nobody knows.
Right.
I could name like several writers from Deadspin. And that's not because I came up and was excited to look at the byline, but just because I've gone to the website so many times, eventually you're going to start to follow the names. Like, oh, okay, Laura Wagner, Tom Lay, what's his name? Drew McGarry. You know, like, just people that I started to see on there. Just from being on the site so much, that shit is, I'm obviously a captured customer when it came to that website. So I just have to float around in the ether and see where I land. I don't know, maybe I'll become a stoolie or something, become like one of these mass holes. And
I doubt it.
No, doubt it.
They're all from, everybody likes Barstools from Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty discouraging. And just the common affliction of short-termism is touching everything, including just our the institutions that really are dependent on like individual artistry is a strong word, but you know, like just and then like one journalist really writes some shit, and you can't commoditize that. You can only commoditize that so much. You can only bring so much money out of that. You have to build up a whole infrastructure around that to make it a viable thing. And what doesn't make it viable is having that person put up 4 posts a day about fucking Odell Beckham's watch or whatever the fuck.
Which Odell Beckham watch did you like? Did you like these cleats? Did you like these cleats? It's like,
these strategies worked, you know, a little while ago, but the internet kind of has tilted away from that because a lot of that is actually just found on like Facebook and Twitter now. And the ones that are doing that are still just relatively struggling. I've seen GQ kind of make that shift. Huffington Post has made that shift. GQ's made a shift towards that. Towards just like kind of content farming shit. And Huffington Post spearheaded that, shifted away from it. You already know the Godfather of that shit is BuzzFeed.
And that shit is just like,
and they've like kind of,
like, it's just like a giant spider of like random shit.
Yeah, but they've also kind of, it's now like a chimera of these fucking
news and hard
news. Hard news, BuzzFeed news is like a real thing, and then they still have like these lists and surveys and like, shit.
We ran out of lists.
Yeah.
Shit.
You know, you're a millennial if. You know you're a millennial if. You know who Rugrats are, and you go through and like, there's all this random shit. Like, this shit is mad disposable. And I don't know, as I've gotten older, the disposable shit is definitely not as fulfilling.
You're like, I got shit to do. Like, what about this?
So we'll see. Hopefully the writers there, they'll get picked up at good outlets. But it's always hard to just build something like that back up. It's not like they can just, oh, we'll just start our own another website. Like, that's not really how this shit works. Like, a lot of those people have their own, you know, lives and families and careers.
Yeah.
And they still need to support themselves. You can't just, it's easy enough to go to WordPress and make a website, but it's extremely difficult to make a whole revenue model.
And writers that write every day and have a presence.
Yeah, presence and hosting and marketing, having, you know, that whole angle, the whole back end of it. It's much more difficult than it appears. I think the both of us see that ourselves when producing this fucking podcast. Like, yeah, you can make some fire, but that don't mean people are going to read it. So that's why it's important when you had something as sturdy and profitable, like they were in the black, don't get me wrong, as Deadspin was. So So then this venture group comes in. They're like, oh, yeah, we can make $3 more out of this. We just got to destroy it and build it back up. It's like, oh, exactly. Fuck you, man.
Damn. Can you pour one out, dog? All right, man, you going to make it?
It's been tough, man. Gawker hurt, son. I used to really love Gawker. That is my favorite fucking website. That's been too.
I mean, if you need a celebrity to snuff, can we snuff the Hulkster?
Snuff the Hulk?
Yeah.
How in the was they get mad?
Yeah, man.
What?
Hogan.
Oh, Hogan.
Yeah.
I think he's talking about the Hulk, like Bruce Banner. No. I was like, no.
Hulk Hogan. The Hulkster.
Yeah, fuck Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Mania.
He was a patsy for that, though. Because he was trying to get a little settlement.
Trying to buy some new do-rags.
No. New bandanas, new beard bleach. And Peter Till came back and was like, nah, y'all got to sue him for it. Y'all got to get a settlement for like $200 million. Like, I don't know if you remember that shit. It was really crazy, son.
That's how ridiculous our legal system is, by the way. Just shoot for it.
Yeah. Like, it was really crazy. Hulk Hogan won this lawsuit, in which he was in the wrong, but his privacy was apparently violated. Got a settlement. Sought more for the settlement, and they awarded him like $200-some million.
It's like, damn, that's how much Hulk Hogan's brand is worth.
How much is his? Was it a sex tape or some shit, wasn't it?
Like, what the fuck? Damn, he can't do no kid shows no more. His dick's out.
And he called his daughter's boyfriend a nigger.
Oh, damn it.
Didn't he? Or he's like, oops. Can't date black people? Which one was it? Did he call him a nigger?
Something like that.
Or he's like, you can't date niggers? Was it the mix up too?
Yeah, so I think that it was that. Something like that.
Yo, I don't know if he said, I think he just said black people. I hope so. Damn. I mean,
Booker T called him a nigger, so it's okay.
Nah, fuck that. Because he said that in the privacy of his own home. You know, he's feeling mad loose.
Of course.
He said, why you keep bringing this black guy around? He's not a brother. Brother.
He's still my durag. Oh, man. With the point you made earlier, DJ, about the sameness of just putting out something, assuming it's going to be good, I charge you, and I thought maybe you would be a little more invested in this, but now we've had the first step into what is going to be I wouldn't say the World War One or World War Two. It's I don't know, the battle of Palo Alto, the battle of the Bay Area, of the streaming wars.
Streaming wars. That's all you had to say.
Yeah, but you know, it's the first salvo. It's early. Mm-hmm. First shots popped off.
Like Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yes, sir.
Who's that?
He can't ride with the top off. He clipped.
Mm. Who's
Gavilo
the
Princip?
Oof.
Give him that.
Who is the
Serbian national?
Who is the Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the streaming wars? Is it Friends or Seinfeld? It's probably Friends, honestly. Or The Office?
The Office deal.
It's definitely The Office deal.
It's Sony Crackle.
Nah, fuck that. Sony Crackle was like one of those small countries that get invaded and shit just mad quick, like they don't even put up a fight. It's like, all right, you got it.
The streaming wars began on the 1st of November 2019 as Apple TV Plus tiptoed into our the streaming pantheon. DG, I don't know if you care about this. I thought maybe you would be intrigued. I thought maybe you'd be pulled into the bubble, but it seems like it's been a tepid response from most of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as I like to think of myself as a media expert, I personally am not fucking with it. I probably would use it in the sense of like this new cablization of content where we're just gonna sort of pick a few things and watch them. Like, all right, okay, I have this. I have what's the other shit? I have Prime and
Netflix, Hulu.
Yeah, you know, I would use it. It's cheaper. It's at price super low at $6. But I just, they don't need more money. They don't care, and it's just weird. Alex Kranz at Gizmodo, he's got a piece. Bland content is an Apple TV's biggest problem. But apparently that is one of the problems. Have you seen any of the ads for like these shows that they have coming out?
No, I actually haven't.
Really? You haven't even seen the ads? I feel like I keep catching them everywhere.
You watch television, nigga? What you...
Nah, I see billboards. I watch illegal streams.
Oh, I've seen ads for...
I see YouTube.
I've seen billboards for a morning show. Yeah.
So, yeah, morning show, Steve Carell, Reese Witherspoon. You got...
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer... She's in it, too?
Yeah.
Damn, all the best white people. Jason Momoa, and he has white eyes. There is the fire young adult re-envisioning of Emily Dickinson.
Are you being facetious? I was wondering who asked for this.
No one asked for that.
That is like the biggest who asked for this show of all time.
Dickinson.
About.
It's like she's fucking a little scrappy writer. I'm a writer.
I know. That's what I'm saying. A show about a writer. Has anybody ever asked for that? Besides, what was that shit? The Nazi take up. The Coen Brothers film. What was that? With your boy. It was old. What you know what I'm talking about? It was about Hollywood. He was a writer. He was going crazy. I'm going to look it up.
Ah, my brain.
You suck.
A writer went crazy? Coen Brothers?
Yeah. It had John Turturro in it.
Oh, man. You got me. I feel like overwhelmed with the potentialities of all this bullshit. And Apple, with their copious amounts of money, deciding to jump into it. It's like, if I was in the ecosystem, maybe I'd appreciate it, especially because they're coming out, I guess, 2 weeks before Disney is supposed to come with the wild, they're coming with the, you know, the banana clip.
Yo, letting it ring.
Like, fuck an apple.
Suck a cacao, as you said. And I was thinking of Barton Fink, by the way. That was the movie that I was referring to.
Barton Fink.
Yeah.
They decide they're going to drop this show, this programming with like, I don't know, 6-7 shows and shit. They're just like, all right. That's it. C. Dickinson, For All Mankind, Ghost Rider, which low key kind of, that's just, I was fired. They bring Ghost Rider back?
Nah, I don't know. Nicolas Cage did a lot of damage to that brand.
No, not Ghost Rider. Ghost Writer.
Ghost Rider? What's all these fucking writer shows they got?
From PBS, dog. PBS Ghost Rider. Snoopy in Space. I don't know. They pulled a Snoopy deal for the children.
Snoopy in Space.
They got the Elephant Queen nature documentary and Oprah's Book Club. They're like, yo, we got 8 shows. It's $6. Y'all deal. There's a few other ones on the docket for the next month and a half, but it's pretty much it.
All right. Wow. There you go.
And I just, I don't need this. And what Kranz says is that Apple has been in a position where, unlike Netflix and Amazon, they position themselves in this as this company that's like, all right, you know, y'all got y'all data and shit, but you know, we protect your data, you know, keep it safe.
Yeah, we good. Yeah.
But on the flip side, they are navigating this space with content where they aren't they aren't taking ratings from whether you like the show or not. They're not presenting you with like options of what else you could
recommendations.
It's just like, just watch the rest of the shit.
I mean, they only got 8 shows.
I think they have a few things that are just like random back of the things that they bought to fill it out. But it's like, this is the only original content, and it's leaving pretty much people like what we've come to expect from the streaming experience. Just like, all right, what is this lackluster thing? It doesn't have previews or what you should be watching.
Mm-hmm.
And the interface for something, a company that's known for its like sleek, you know, simplistic
design yeah.
focused, I mean, ethos is like, what are y'all doing? And it goes to the half-bakedness of all this shit with the streaming wars. It's like, yeah. Yo, we got money. We're going to do this thing. We're going to give y'all a boutique set of 9 shows, nigga, and...
Fuck with me.
Give us $6 more. Honestly, we don't even need it. If you bought something new, you get it for free. Right? If you buy a new Apple thing within the next year, you just get it, which is like, okay. But what I've seen is that it's not even exclusivity with the shows. Like, Jason Momoa's got a new Netflix show coming out, too. It's just like, can they, like, get somebody on an exclusive deal?
Nah,
like,
they get mixy. If you Jason Momoa, you wouldn't be locked to Apple. They know niggas ain't watching that.
It's just like, yo, he's just cashing out. It doesn't matter.
Like,
so,
Aquaman.
In the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to see it all happen, all come together. And I just don't know if there's space for all this. And considering the players, I feel like they're going to just keep forcing it upon us, like Amazon's been doing. Like, we don't need it. We don't need it, but it's just they got too much money.
It'll just exist in the background. It doesn't sound as if this is definitely not the cash cow for Apple. I don't think there's much enthusiasm there coming from them as a company, nor the media on the whole, as you're seeing there. I think you and Alex's disappointment is in the fact that you don't feel like you need it. So you're given just like a limp, you know, noodle in your hand. You're like, well, what am I supposed to do with this? It's just not fire like that. So, yeah, this is just their opening silo. I think some of those functional issues that you just mentioned, they'll probably fill them in over time, whether that's a rating system, a recommendation system. All those things usually roll in over time because they have all that type of stuff. And Apple Music, right, obviously. So if they were to be doing this platform well and right, then those things will be added in. But in the day, everybody's just vying for our attention, and it's only so much that shit in the day, and it's only so many dollars in our pocket. So there are a few killer apps already out there where if you're any modern person, probably, Gen X and below, you're probably going to have Netflix. More than half of the country literally has Amazon Prime, so you basically have Prime Video. What else is out there? You're going to have HBO either through your cable package or some shit. Maybe Hulu. And that's already $50 off rip. So now you have a few more entrants in that space with Apple Music. You add another $6 to that. And HBO, they're going to do the HBO Max thing, right? Next year, I believe, rolling out next year, March. Which is a larger compilation of them and Turner properties and stuff.
Warner
properties. And that'll bring you to like $70. And that's not even including your internet deal, which the prices for most ISPs has inflated over the past few years, unbeknownst to everyone, to where the average internet bill is like $80 a month.
And can I make another point about what Krantz makes in here for these companies, specifically Apple, HBO Max, and Amazon too? The vertical integration of all this shit makes all this real cynical, because the big thing is you can't, the casting issue is like, oh, you have Apple, this is Apple shit? Fuck Google Cast. It's all AirPlay. So you got a TV at your house, you want to put which most TVs are running off Android shit.
Right.
It's like, you want to cast the shit from your phone?
He said, no, bitch, we AirPlay.
Nah, nigga, you get it, Apple AirPlay. And then becomes this whole workaround, becomes this cumbersome thing because of this vertical business model bullshit.
Yeah, everything is siloed off from one another. Or it can be. Especially, I mean, Apple has always had that walled garden for a while. It remains to be seen if that will be viable when it comes to an actual television option where people appreciate and definitely delve into having a variety of options. Because as of right now, y'all don't have live sports, right? So how are they going to watch live sports? They're going to have to go through some other application or a different mechanism to get to that type of product. So this shit is all building up. We've gone through the motions of already saying they're going to somehow package all this shit together again and just call it something different than cable, I guess, and just streaming. Like, I got a streaming package. Because we're hitting the points of redundancies, and these libraries are just, like, balkanized now. You don't know where to find shit. Now they have applications that support these applications to where if you just search, if I wanted to watch, I was trying to watch Zero Dark Thirty the other night, right? Mm-hmm. So if you do that, they have ways where they send spiders out to check all the different streaming services, because it could be at one of a million different fucking services now. So it just makes it a bit more of a hassle than one would want it for it to be. So, I mean, I'm not that hot on it. I wasn't really that hot on another TV entrant anyway. I'm not that pressed. Like, there's so much out there.
Well, you're not hyped for Peacock?
Which one is that?
NBC joint.
God damn, it's just called Peacock.
Comcast coming, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't. What do they have? What fire? They got The Office. That's the guy in Parks and Rec.
Yeah, and they have Universal Films.
Who's that? The Mummy?
Fast and Furious, the Mummy.
I'm out on Fast and Furious.
I will tell you this. The word on the grapevine is that it's going to be free.
Okay, well, then if it's free, then it's free.
Yeah, they're going to do that Pluto TV model with real shit. Fuck y'all up.
Ooh, fuck the game up. Well, what
like,
is...
Because they know they're like, nigga, we're not Netflix. We'll fall back. They're going to just go a different route. Ads, fuck it.
Good. I mean, it's good for people to try out different strategies. And, yeah, who's really going through the motions now is Netflix in this space where they've enjoyed dominance for quite some time in business years, being really the only strong monolithic streaming platform out there besides your, you know, Netflix and, I mean, besides your HBO Go's and Hulu's, but both of those, they had a slightly different flavor of things. HBO had its own, you know, just HBO properties, and Hulu had mostly, like, a lot of broadcast shows, from my understanding, and they just got into unique programming. So up to that point, Netflix had any and everything, and they were starting to come out with their own original content as well. But you see even your Peacocks and Disney and all that, they're pulling their shit off of Netflix. Like when their deals, licensing deals for each of these properties have been running out, they've been taking them off of Netflix.
Netflix is low-key in a bad spot. I think they'll be fine just because of, you know, brand equity.
Netflix and chill is a real thing.
That's streaming.
Yeah.
Netflix is streaming, but they don't have, they're not vertical. They're a content company. And that's it.
And they actually.
So they opened their first Fire theme park. It's coming.
Well, I mean, they can go in so many different directions. I don't know if they got to go the whole fucking Logan Roy route, but have you watched Succession? That was a Succession reference, but.
Succession.
Yeah.
No, I know it has a good theme song. Yeah.
You heard the Pusha T version?
I have.
Oh, okay. All right, you hit that. So, they definitely have a lot of brand equity built in. But they're losing properties, like, case in point being Friends and The Office will be offered within the next few years. And those are the literally number one and number two most streamed shows on Netflix. They don't give out a lot of their streaming data, but they do admit to those two being on there. So that just goes to show you that, yeah, these wars are legit, and this is like just cutthroat business practices. None of them are really rooting for one another. It's good for us to have, us as consumers, for us to have choice, but it's a different type of choice because these are all different properties and shows and stuff half the time. So it's not like I can go to Netflix and watch Martin reruns. And I'm saying that in a wishful tone because I don't know if any streaming service has all the Martin seasons on to be available to be streamed.
BT Plus, talk about.
Oh, where?
Supposedly.
Oh, fuck. Okay. And it's not like you could go there versus, you can go to BT Plus right now and watch the same content. But, I just enjoy the user experience at one more than I do the other. That's not really the case. The case is Netflix has, what's my shot fuck with? Netflix has Ozark. BET Plus has the Martin reruns. So now you just call it Between a Rock and a Hard Place, where you say, I guess I just have to fucking get both.
Can't like this shit.
Or pick one, or I can't like it.
You and that.
So.
Dark times, man. I will say this, Disney Plus just made a deal with Giannis, dog.
Giannis?
Yeah. Life story. I don't know what they're going to do. He got a movie coming out now.
I think he needs... This is just spitballing, but... I would prefer if he and his team and Nike moved away from this Greek freak shit.
Yeah.
This nigga's not Greek, son. Like,
nigga, I'm Nigerian.
Yeah, the Nigerian freak or something. I don't know. The Niger freak.
No, I don't want to hear that shit. That sounds disgusting.
Yeah, it sounds kind of freaky, I know. But nigga, he's not Greek, though. That's like, it's just weird. Like, he's not Greek.
I feel like all points that are well said, and it kind of fuels into like the last piece we have today, because the next one's about taste. It's about preferences. What do you like? What intrigues you? And now with this world of content, it's all about being safe. Established properties. What world can we enter where we know exactly what we're going to get and we'll like it and we're going to be content with that? And I think that's one of the biggest issues with choice and I don't know, the fear of these streaming companies when they make properties and they develop different things, because it's all about what's the most safe bullshit on their slate that fits a certain
that can spot. Get that like can get C, the
like
biggest.
Just joke about C, just like, oh, it's a sci-fi thing, Jason Momoa. Oh.
Yeah,
like,
it's to get the biggest tranche of potential eyeballs.
With that, there is a certain old guard, a certain type of cinephile and cinematic figure that has a long-standing aesthetic and eye toward what cinema is that may not sit with the modern era of content creation. People like Brandon Harrison and Derek Williams. Or...
That's out of the line.
Or... Like renowned filmmakers like Martin Scorsese, who has been, I don't know, maligned, but sort of called out for him claiming that the Marvel wave of films is not, quote unquote, cinema.
Yeah, it sounds rather pompous and haughty. It does. It's like Marvel movies. Those are not cinema.
He's like, you know, I mean,
I wear ascots.
Marvel movies are they cinema?
Like, yeah, like, good. I wasn't doing a Scorsese impression.
I am. I'm trying to.
Yeah, the manic thing he does.
You know, I mean, cinema's not. It's not what this is.
That's probably exactly how he did that shit. Actually,
this opinion piece in the New York Times, he felt the need to drop on us, which has a shit ton of comments actually. And it's funny, almost 2000. And it's funny to me because the fact that he needs to say this is just like, it feels unfounded because a lot of his points are like, yeah, I have a particular taste. It doesn't mean that's for everybody. That's fine. There's people that make these films that are incredibly skilled and whatnot. But he seems to really be talking about on the studio level, on the production level, in terms of putting faith in filmmakers. You are putting faith in something with basically no stakes, which means the stories have no stakes and the plots have no stakes. And there's just this thing that we're all participating in, this milieu of content that is just a porridge of blah. This consistency that's like...
It's stasis.
It's just like you know what it is. And that is a fair assessment. For all this superhero shit, because I've said this, and I'm sure you feel this too. I think the last superhero movie was Avengers Endgame. And when I say that, what I mean is the last one. Like,
oh, Spider-Man 2 came out like a month after that.
Yeah, it did, but
Joker came out.
So Joker's not a superhero movie. I'm not gonna put that in there.
Okay,
but
arguably,
but Avengers Endgame was it's the last one. There aren't no more. We finished. We're done. At least like 15 years. I don't need any more.
What do you think Star Wars is?
Space Western.
Space opera? You think it's a Western?
Yeah.
Has different aspects of it. Okay, sure.
But this like you know, this thing with like these heroes that you every plot is exactly the same and you're just there to participate with
the thrill ride
of a fandom from previously established IP, and it's just like, all right, it's like, woo, there's Captain Marvel, woo! And the nerds do that, and then they're satisfied about the recreation of some id of what they've been thinking this film was going to be like their whole lives.
Yeah,
and it's like, what the fuck does that have to do with telling the story?
I think it's telling a story. He's making an argument against the industry and then summing it up semantically, because he defines cinema differently than
right.
What others do, or what like a larger mainstream does.
Semantic argument is not fair.
Yeah. So that when he does that, it obfuscates his actually well-stated, the viewpoint of where the film industry lies. Because, for one, it is very ironic when you think about it. I know I've gone to a lot of superhero movies, and I've enjoyed most of them. I really was thrilled, to use the best word here, in a lot of moments during Endgame, particularly that, you know, that poster scene where Cap finally is able to say Avengers Assemble.
They assembled
them. And now before he said it, I think I was there with my girlfriend. And he said Avengers, and I said Assemble right before he said it, and she just looked at me like, you fucking nerd. And I was like, nah, this shit is lit. Like, I just was waiting to see that shit. So, yeah, and it's a good feeling, but it's that, who made Endgame? Wasn't it two directors?
It was the Russos?
Yeah, I believe so. So, would they immediately call their shit cinema? I don't even think that would really be on the tip of their tongue, really, when they're describing their movie. They would just call it a comic book movie or whatever. So, the semantic argument aside, I definitely empathize with Mr. Scorsese, the legend that he is, because it's just blatantly clear. And I think it's mostly because if we zoom out and we look at things on a macro level, it's and on a circular level, bring it back to the beginning of the pod, it's the fucking short-termism.
Right.
All of these studios have merged, if not been acquired and bought out, and are now pretty much maintained by these massive studios that are wholly owned by shareholders that would like to see a return on their investment. In the form of increased stock prices, increased dividends, increased stability, year over year. And you have to see more and more positive returns. So the trickle-down effect of that is the grunts on the ground, your middle management and whatnot, they're not willing to take chances on shit.
Yeah.
They're just not. So what do they see? They see massive IP. They see the lowest common denominator of entertainment. A lot of this is mixed in with just common Americanism in the first place, which is, you know, flash bang boom, you know, just of violence and strife and clash and group against group and misogyny, racism, sex, like all those things are intertwined with just American it on the whole. So the end result you get over time is the 15th fucking Transformers movie, the completion of the Marvel Phase 3 cycle, and what's some shit I saw the other day? I don't know, the Emoji movie. You know, that's what you get.
Not bad.
Not bad?
He couldn't make his face. That was like the plot of that. Like he was supposed to make a certain face and he couldn't do it right. So he became an emoji that makes multiple faces.
I'm mad you just tried to explain this fucking movie on the pod, desecrating the pod.
I just appreciated that, you know, there's like some executives.
There was an attempt.
Like, fuck, we gotta make a movie about emojis. So like, what's his story? What's his emoji like?
Imagine being in that room set. I feel like Scorsese would probably try to fucking kill himself.
It's like an art to like, it's a collage, baby. You gotta fit.
It's smearing shit around on a board.
No, man, it's collage, baby. You gotta create art within the confines.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's all art at the end of the day, but it's varying levels and integrity to the art. But I think I veered off from my one point for you. Was just that it was ironic, now that I think about it, on the whole, that even as I saw Endgame, you knew everything was going to be all right at the end.
Yep.
You knew somehow Thanos was going to die or be defeated, and the Avengers were going to come out victorious. You just knew that.
Right.
It was just a matter of how. How are you going to get to that point? So that does mitigate a lot of the wonder and experience of cinema, let's say, quote unquote.
So I was going to ask you this because, like, I agree with that. The idea, like, something like Get Out mm-hmm. was such a phenomenon because it was like, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
This unique take from this unique person in their perspective. And with the way financing has changed, because basically film is, and something he alludes to in the piece is that streaming has created a place where, like, you're not going to see these films. Filmmakers want to make films and see on the big screen, but it's like people are watching shit on their phones. It's fluid. It's more fleeting than it has ever been.
Yeah.
So the model has changed. But what part of, I don't know, film over your however many years of being a cinephile, DJ, which you're like, damn, I wish they make shit like this more. Or like, I haven't seen this sort of film that I like, or this stylistic thing. It's kind of gone by the wayside. But you're like, oh, that'd be fire if more people revisited that or gave it a chance.
What type of film?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always good for a good psychological kind of thriller.
Right.
Just anything really from the 90s. Everything was just better than the 90s. Everything.
Wow.
Give me another Alex Cross film. Bring Morgan Freeman's old ass back. Let's do.
You didn't like it when it was Tyler Perry. Tyler
Perry. Yo, when I first saw that shit, I was like, "Is this the same? Supposed to be the same nigga?" Like, goddamn. I mean, it could have been a good attempt, son, but Along Came a Spider and Kiss the Girls. It's just not the same when it's Tyler Perry, son. You don't have the voice of God. You just don't.
No.
You just don't.
You don't.
You're Tyler Perry. You got the voice of Madea. That shit was great.
Good point. Yeah, man, I feel you on that. I was kind of thinking something similar, like along the psychological thriller, or the sort of the long things that make you just like, oh, what's going to happen? The pondering. I was thinking about Scorsese. I was thinking about Shutter Island. I was like, how much I love that movie. It's like, even like shit like these weird cop crime dramas, one-offs, Art of War, Wesley Snipes, these like weird, like just stupid
Running Man, Enemy of the State,
random shit. More Ethan Hawke. If Ethan Hawke is in it, I'm down. That means he's frazzled, he's a cop, things aren't going right.
Yeah, right.
It's hate.
Ethan Hawke always looks like he's had like one cigarette too many. I don't know.
Perfect, man. Listeners, shout to the heat keeping us warm in the PLG parlor. FYI.
Yeah, you're going to have to EQ this out.
that's the plan. But yeah, I just hopefully there is a space, and maybe it'll be a thing where supposedly on all these damn streaming services, there's a corner for cinema.
Yeah, I mean, I think the piece was actually, and this whole, rhetorical point of view is all bred out of envy, because he feels like, oh, I used to have my name on a placard up there at any time that I wanted, or any time I was able to push for, and now it's a fucking Marvel movie and I have to finesse some type of Netflix deal to get my movie to get The Irishman up on a couple of screens, just in order for me to have that old feeling again. So it is a bit of those growing pains associated just with the passage of time and the movement of industry. But that's not to say that he definitely does not have a point, because it's not, the envy is not from, oh, there are just some new young, hotshot directors and actors out here that are taking up the roles and maybe I'm just washed and my time in the spotlight is gone. It's not that. It's these thrill rides in the form of movies being made that are taking up that same real estate space. And that's really the core of his issue and the core of why he doesn't want to call it cinema, because his cinema was something different at a different point in time.
I like that. That was well said, DJ.
I try.
He's very articulate. I'm about to go hang out with Martin right now.
I know, that yo. He's going to wear, Ascot and shit.
I doubt.
I'm still going.
It's like 9:30. He's probably sleepy and shit.
Oh, he's sleepy.
Yeah, he's 80 years old. We out here 9:30.
Is the rest of the cast going to be there?
I don't know.
Shit, Bobby lived down there. De Niro, he lived in Tribeca.
And maybe he'll make an appearance.
He can pull up.
It was good.
You know he's like divorced and shit now, right?
What?
I think actually, remove that. I hope not. He's married to a black woman. Somebody got divorced.
Looking for new chocolate.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, man. DJ, any notes on all of our, media complaints today?
I think there's still definitely a lot of bright spots out there when it comes to media or movies and television, especially television. We're probably like a
platinum age.
Yeah, we're in the platinum age. There's just so much shit now. So that's actually kind of a complaint. It's just so much B to B plus shit out there that it's hard to really make time to watch everything. And when it comes to the big screen movies, I mean, I saw Parasite the other day. It was fire. It's amazing. Great movie. So there's still great films being made. It's just not as much space for them. So I just try to, when I can, because I'm part of the same throes as everyone else. I go and see Marvel movies and shit when I feel like it. But I try to see a good piece of cinema when I can. You know, because it still exists. It just, it's not as prevalent. They don't capture as much of the national attention as they may be used to. But it's still out there. So Scorsese may have a point, but it's not a total point. You have like A24s and people like that out there. That
it's plenty of slave movies for I'm trying to do watch.
That. What's that?
It's plenty of slave movies for you guys to watch.
Shit, I hope not. That's not my niche.
Please go and enjoy some films that aren't necessarily a layup and make you think about life and our place in society and this world. So that's my note.
All right.
Yeah, it's been another great Send a Link. Y'all keep listening, you know. We'll try to stay black.
Yeah, enjoy your whiskey with Marty.
I'll let you know. I'll slap the shit out of him. Right. For you.
What's your favorite Scorsese film?
That's a good question. Not Taxi Driver, because I realized, I was like, damn, he really likes him. He must be the same nigga and shit. is that? Was it Goodfellas? Hugo.
Him and Spielberg really went forward around that time. Remember, Spielberg did like Avengers of 10-10 around the same time. Was like, okay.
A wistful look back at the time before blacks could, I don't know, have a good time.
It's like some animated shit.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's what I got for you.
Well, I mean,
George Méliès, the invention of the first film, cinema.
Well, I'll be trite and say, yeah, mine is Goodfellas.
That's fine. That's a good
it's like a layup.
Sam Jackson's in that.
He is, like, for 2 seconds, he's shot in the back of the head.
Yep.
Fuck, this nigga was just here. He was the only black person in that movie, too, man.
Yeah, man. Well, if you don't want to get killed, you know, don't look at the dresses. That's
he was in that shit for legit. No, you can't do. He was in that shit for legit, like.
He's got pop.
3 minutes.
It's tragic.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. It's been real.
Carrie!